Would you pray with me, please? Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations on each and every one of our hearts be pleasing to you, our rock and our salvation. Amen. Now, we've gotten used to just about every Sunday the pastor asking us a question, and we give our answer to someone that we didn't come to church with. But today I'm going to change it up a bit. I'm going to ask you a question, but I don't want you to share your answer with anyone. Keep it private, but keep it honest. If you could have anything in the world, what would it be? We've all played that game, and we've played it at different stages in our life. Remember playing that game with my little brother as a child, and we both said we wanted to live in a house that had a swimming pool. I laugh at that now, since I look at pools as one more thing that needs to be cleaned, and I never learned how to swim. It's a fun game to play. But for Solomon, it was no game. Early in his reign, God comes to Solomon in a dream and tells him he can have anything he wants. And God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." It's one thing for two little kids to ask each other that question. But can you even fathom God asking you that question? What's the catch? Solomon knows that he has big shoes to fill as king, and the words of his father must ring in his ears every single day. Be strong, show yourself a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in his ways, keep his decrees and commands, his laws and requirements. Knowing the enormity of his responsibility, he answers God like this. "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David. But I am only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong." Good answer. God was pleased with Solomon, happy that he asked for wisdom instead of wealth, a long life, or death for his enemies. So pleased was God that he bestowed enough wealth and honor that in his lifetime, no other king could equal Solomon. All Solomon had to do was walk in obedience to God, keep his decrees and commands, as David his father did, and he would have a long life. Solomon, in turn, did his job well. He was a great leader. The people were in awe of his ability to settle disputes. We all know the story of the two women who come to Solomon with only one child. They both claim to be the mother and want the king to decide who will win the child. Solomon suggests cutting the child in half. One woman thinks that's a pretty good idea, and the other refuses to see the child hurt. Barbaric as the suggestion sounds today, several thousand years ago or today, the outcome is the same. No real mother would allow harm to come to her child. She would relinquish her right as a mother to spare them. As king, Solomon didn't just use his wisdom to keep peace. He wanted to share what he knew so his people could always be pleasing to God. He wrote down little ditties like, "A gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid anyone who talks too much." And There is no wisdom, no insight, no plan that can succeed against the Lord. Hundreds of these sayings were written down and included in the book of the Bible that we know as Proverbs. Things were really looking spectacular for the whole of Israel. Solomon was not only a great king, but he gave back to God with the building of the great temple. According to biblical record, it took 180,000 workers 7 years to build this temple. But when the temple was finished, God's very presence took up residence in a sacred section, and he continued his instruction to develop Solomon into an even greater leader. Imagine God taking up presence. He always does. People travel from far and wide to see the great Solomon in his temple. And God is pleased that as these people come, they hear who the one true God is. And they see firsthand all he can do. Time marches on and Solomon grows richer and richer. We know what the Queen of Sheba brought him. Tons and tons of gold and chariots were all at Solomon's disposal. But he accumulates more than wealth. During that time, polygamy was considered normal, but it was not sanctioned by God. And as difficult as it is to believe, Solomon acquires 700 wives and 300 concubines. Yes, 700 and 300. I can't even say anything about that. But if you don't know already, it's the beginning of the end for Solomon. You see, one of those commands God handed down was the command to not marry from other nations because it could lead to the worship of foreign gods. It didn't happen right away, but it happened. Over time, the wives turned Solomon's heart to other gods. How does that happen? How does the richest, wisest, most honored king fall to false gods? How does such a powerful man who built a temple where the one true God resides turn from him? Randy Freese tells a story in his companion book to the story about the phenomenon of putting a frog in a pan of boiling water. He will immediately jump out to save his own life, just like if you were to touch scalding water and instantly jerk your hand away. Our little green friend has the same reaction, only with spring-loaded legs. But if you put this same frog in a pan of lukewarm water, he will sit there as happy and content as tourists in a jacuzzi. Then, as you gradually turn the heat on the stove, our little buddy Kermit only relaxes a little more. As the water gets hotter and hotter, he doesn't realize that his warm bath has become a boiling cooker until it's too late. Randy Frazee suggests that this is what happened to Solomon. But I think that is just one aspect to the fall of a great man. Turn on the TV every day, and you can view firsthand the downfall of a politician, a celebrity, or even a man of God. A couple of weeks ago, longtime Channel 7 anchorman Bill Bonds passed away. Over the span of a week, clips ran, starting with a young, ambitious street reporter working hard to cement his career in a city that will use adjectives like legend, king, and icon to describe him. I read that at one point he was working three jobs. He was doing radio, and there was a job he got turned down for because they just didn't think he had an authoritative sound. He got his big break when, as a time in the city when it was so devastating for us, he cemented his career during the riots in Detroit. His peers tell of a wonderful heart and love for the city that so often gets a bad rap. He fought for the underdog, but it was practically common knowledge that he was the highest paid local anchor in America. But by the end of the week, tributes that we are not just told of his $1 million a year salary, but we hear of an unfettered ego. The man with the enviable salary and high profile job started to get a little too comfortable in his position. Years of success faded when the stories of tragedy and addiction marred the legend of journalism. We mourned with him when his daughter was killed by a drunk driver and shook our heads in disbelief when he was arrested for drunk driving. We watched as he politically or publicly challenged the mayor of Detroit to a fist fight while on the air under the influence. We tuned in every night to see if we could notice the level of intoxication that he may be working under. And we watched when he came back to the job where he was labeled king after a 3-month stay in rehab, and he told the world he was an alcoholic. A good Irish Catholic, Bill knew God, sent his kids to Catholic school, knew the law and commands, reaped great rewards in life, and fell like Solomon. The disease of alcoholism aside, I think the fall of Bill Bonds and Solomon and a host of others is arrogance. Blessings abound, and who is to be served is forgotten. A few days ago, I watched World News, and the story centered around Pope Francis having a meeting with his cardinals and bishops. The journalist described the gathering as the Vatican's version of a Christmas party. But the Pope was not in a partying mood, and he was letting his employees know that he was not happy. The news clip shows a room full of godly men, dressed in priestly robes, crosses around their neck, looking up at a man taking them to task for their behavior. Pope Francis stands before these men of God and scolds them for being gossips, chastises them for their desire of material things, and being dissolute. He reminds them that they are servants of God and they need to start acting like it. Now, these men have worked hard to be in the position that they're in. They've been blessed. They are revered in their religion. And yet, they have grown arrogant. I look at these men, and I see examples of servants who have forgotten that it is God who is served, not the other way around. But this is not an affliction of kings, legends, and grand men of God. It is an affliction of every single one of us. Not a single soul can claim to follow the one true, who claims to follow the one true God, hasn't been like the frog in the warm bath. None of us have lived a life like Solomon. But who hasn't had the arrogance to think that they aren't going to cave to the temptations of the world? Who hasn't treated God like he's our personal servant, only getting in touch when we need something? who hasn't bargained with God only to forget the deal when the panic wears off? Who hasn't started their faith journey like a sprinter only to get winded and sit along the side of the road? Good news. 3 days ago, we celebrated the birth of a baby that gives us another chance to get it right. As we approach the new year, we need to examine our hearts and look to see if we are servants of God, or are we expecting God to serve us? Are you living your life in a warm pan of water, not realizing that you are putting yourself in a situation to get cooked? Or are you striving to live your life with a discerning heart? Are you asking God for wisdom? Are you coming forth into the temple and asking to feel his presence? My prayer and hope is that you have a blessed new year, that you have a growing and deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. Amen.